This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and this show is called The People Behind the PhDs. This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and welcome to part two of the interview with Dr. Jenna Klusterman, who uses radios to investigate the universe, and she studies star formation in the Milky Way at the University of Southern Indiana in Evansville, Indiana. There's a few seconds of overlap, so we can pick up right where we left off in The People Behind the PhDs. Stories. Stories are humanity's original technology, so I'm proud to carry on the traditional technology and share this story with you. Whether you're on an iPhone or an Android, whether you're on Apple, Spotify, or another podcast service, whether you're at home, in your car, at work, on public transportation, working out, or just walking around, I dedicate my shows to you. Dr. Z Productions and Podcasts, Consequential Stories for Life.
I've never taken any music theory, but, you'd have different notes that, you tune to, and, so you hear a frequency that comes out. So same idea when it comes to looking at stars.
Okay. Well, yeah. So we're going from dance to violin to stars, which is a nice...
Yeah, sorry. We're jumping all over
the place. Oh, no, those are fantastic segues. That's what I like. So at this point, you're in high school, and you started probably thinking about college at this point. I mean, what was your focus? I mean, obviously, you're a very accomplished academic, and especially at a young age, you certainly had some sense of what you wanted to do. What were your goals sort of when you were a freshman, sophomore, junior? Was it all about college? Were you taking standardized tests? I mean, what was your orientation at that point?
So there was a big difference between Jenna as a freshman and Jenna as a sophomore in high school.
What was the difference?
Yeah, so I was still very serious about dance until the end of my freshman year, but I got some injuries, and so I didn't continue on as a dancer, and so that was the unfortunate part. But I started to get more into theater after that.
Okay.
And so what did I spend my time after school doing? I was in plays. And, I guess I did do the math Olympiad.
Okay.
So yeah, I must have done a math Olympiad. I think that was in my eighth grade. So that was right before high school.
So you're you're the 14th person I've talked to for this show, The People Behind the PhDs. And you're the third, I believe, certainly the second, who had a career in sports or in your case dance, which is pretty much the same thing as far as moving your body. And had some sort of awakening, in your case it was injury prompted, and then they changed there. So this is actually not an uncommon moment, it seems like, for people to have like a very strong body movement orientation and then go somewhere else. And so you still kept with it through the theater, it sounds like, but then you started moving towards, you said you did a math Olympiad in high school.
Yeah, I always had like simultaneous tracks of science and math and art.
Okay.
I can say that, and that lasted up through college. So I always had a simultaneous, love of theater and dance and music, while also, feeling that my career would probably take me in the direction of math and science, which were my good subjects in school.
Okay. You just were naturally good at them, or, was it through your dad, you think, or you just naturally?
From a young age, I was getting encouragement from home, and, I think, unfortunately, our society says, oh, math is hard, especially girls, they can't do math, these kinds of things, and so I was aware of that, thanks to my father, and so I was actively trying to push myself to not fall into the stereotypes.
Okay.
Math is hard. And I always I always was like, I like math. So, but I also say this, that something about sports, or in my case, dance, it really does teach you some discipline. You have to work really, really hard. And so even if you're not applying that to, you know, dance anymore, you're still applying it to other parts of your life.
Well, yeah, the discipline of waking up at a certain time and getting ready at a certain time and getting somewhere at a certain time and then doing that thing at a certain time, it spills over pretty easily, doesn't it?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like, so your father is obviously a big help because he just encouraged you, like, you know, you're good at math and you like it and just continue doing it. And then you use the stereotype that girls aren't good at math to say, well, actually I am, and I'm going to prove it, and I'm going to use that to work maybe even harder than you would have otherwise, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay. So
sums it up.
Okay, good. So you're in high school, you're doing all these incredible things, transitioning now to musical theater, you know, music and theater, it sounds like, and academics. Where did you end up getting accepted to your undergrad, and where did you apply? I mean, there's a whole process in that, but where did you get accepted, and where did you eventually start your undergraduate career?
Well, okay, that does go back to the summer between freshman and sophomore years. We took a family vacation. That's a long story short. We took a family vacation out to San Francisco, and I said, I want to go to Berkeley for college.
Okay.
And my mom said, no, not even.
why not?
Well, we lived in Indiana, so it was pretty far for us.
Okay, she didn't want you to go that far away.
She didn't want me to go that far away.
Okay.
So senior year comes around. I had an extraordinarily talented and competitive high school class. Our average SAT score was, for our B students, was higher than any other school's SAT scores for their A students in the entire state of Indiana. It was just that good of an anomaly of a class.
Wow, that's incredible. What were the scores if you recall?
I think I remember they just mentioned that statistic. I don't remember them.
Okay, that one sticks out. But so you know, it was a super high competitive place, and the B students were very good.
It just happened that my particular class also just had a huge number of really talented students. And so it actually made the process of applying to college difficult, because nobody, these colleges, everyone gets into Indiana, not everyone, and especially not these days, it's gotten very difficult to get into Indiana, but everyone at my academic level got into Indiana. No problem, Indiana University. But the issue was that you apply to some of the smaller liberal arts schools in the area, and they're not going to accept every single student that's qualified from Bloomington South, because they don't want the incoming freshman class to be the class of, 2000 from Bloomington South. So it was really kind of a dartboard. When we all applied to the same close by liberal arts schools, it was pretty random who got in at all those schools. And
what are the names of some of those schools?
Let's see. Washington University in St. Louis, uh-huh. University of Chicago, Northwestern, Vanderbilt.
So fantastic places, all of them, obviously.
Yeah. What else? I applied to Brandeis, same situation. Actually, it turned out there were several people that applied to Brandeis for my high school, so I didn't get in there. Then a lot of East Coast schools, a lot of the Ivies. We had two people get into Harvard. I don't know how many people got into Yale, but probably about two. It seemed like every place accepted two students from my high school class. So.
Wow. At this time, let's hear from our sponsor. This People Behind the PhDs episode is sponsored by Harp Concepts. Are you an up-and-coming artist with a bright idea? Are you a startup company who needs to prove your concept? Or Are you a person who likes to personalize special gifts? Hark Concepts makes high-quality 3D models for a fraction of the price of big-name companies. Learn more at harpconcepts.com. That's harpconcepts.com.
It turns out that because I'd been out to California that freshman year, or that summer between freshman and sophomore year, when my senior year came around, I asked my mom again, can I apply to Berkeley? And she said, you can apply, but you can't go.
Okay. So, that's her negotiation offer.
That's their new negotiation. So, you know, I didn't apply to that many schools. I applied to Northwestern, University of Washington in St. Louis, Brandeis, and Indiana University. I probably should have applied to more, but it turned out that there were just a ton of people who applied. I really thought that I was going to get in and go to Northwestern. That's where I really wanted to go.
Okay.
But yeah, there were so many great applicants from my school that, you know, they only took two and I wasn't one of them. So I didn't get in there. And so basically I ended up getting into Indiana University and Berkeley because nobody had thought to apply all the way out to the West Coast.
Okay, so you got accepted to the dream school from your freshman, between your freshman and sophomore years in high school.
I did, yeah. So wow. My mother was also like, why didn't you apply to Stanford? And I don't know. I can't answer that question. Okay. I just applied to Berkeley.
Yeah. Well, I talked to someone a few weeks ago, and his school all along was Stanford. So people just have their places that they really want to go sometimes, and that's just how it works. So you got accepted to Berkeley. What did you study at Berkeley?
So I wrote in my application, and I stayed pretty true to this, although not exactly. I wanted to study physics, I started taking the physics series right away. The thing about physics is you can't decide to change your major after your sophomore year. Like, it's going to take you extra time. It's a really rigid four-year program.
Okay.
So I started in right away on physics classes, and I started taking theater classes as well.
Oh, okay. Did you do a double major in physics and in theater?
Well, so I took a year of theater classes, and I decided I was much better at physics.
Okay.
So I didn't, in my sophomore year, take any theater classes. I decided to focus on physics. And then Berkeley did something where they doubled. I was an out-of-state student. At the time that I went to Berkeley, it wasn't an absurd amount of money out of state. It was not that much more than the Indiana in-state rate, believe it or not. I mean, it was a little bit more, but not a hugely significant number.
Okay.
And then the summer between my sophomore and junior years of college, they doubled the out-of-state rate literally overnight.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Yeah. So I was not prepared for that financially.
Oh my goodness.
So I actually dropped out of college. And
this is after your freshman year?
After my sophomore year.
After your sophomore year, excuse me. Oh my goodness, yeah. Okay.
So I decided that I was going to try and work for a little bit and get in-state tuition in California. So I registered for classes at community college.
Which one?
I registered for dance courses.
Oh, okay.
So I took a ballet and jazz dance at community college for a semester, and I just, you know, I kind of woke up one night, I think it was right as I was realizing that I didn't know what to do, that, you know, I was going to have to pay double what I thought I was going to have to pay and for my tuition. And so I woke up one night and I said, I got to dance again. This has been too long. I literally had a dream about. And so I decided, well, I'm going to register for classes at community college. I'm going to take some dance classes and just kind of take a break and reevaluate my life and see where I'm at.
Wow. This is kind of remarkable then, isn't it?
Huh?
Well, this is remarkable because your life up until this point, you know, it'd been a pretty straight arrow. I mean, looking back on it, obviously, towards Berkeley at some level. And then suddenly, you know, your life is very different after your sophomore year. Like, you really have to make some quick and hard decisions, it sounds like.
I viewed it a little differently. I was like, I'm not making hard decisions. I'm actually taking a step back and really thinking through these in a lot of detail, giving them a lot of thought, just to make sure that I'm really on the right path. And so, you know, I did that. I reapplied to get back into Berkeley, but this time I applied for in-state tuition. And somehow, some way, I managed to convince the UC system that I should qualify for in-state tuition. So I did. I went ahead and got in-state tuition at Berkeley. So I went back to Berkeley after that.
Okay. Well, that's very nice of the UC system to finally give you in-state tuition. Okay. So then you started, you picked up your junior year, but you had some extra credits, or how did that work at that point? Okay.
So I picked up my junior year, and then, you know, I realized that, you know, I think also at the end of my sophomore year, I was pretty burned out. Like, I'd just been doing physics classes, and, you know, I realized that, you know, for so long I'd had these parallel tracks between art and math and science, you know, even through high school, even after I stopped dancing, I was still doing theater. And that my freshman year, I also had that balance, you know, the theater and the physics. And then my sophomore year, I just took physics classes. And I think I decided that I really needed to go back to that balance between art and science and math. So I started taking dance classes along with the physics classes.
Okay.
And that was a bit of a challenge because dance classes and lab classes, it seemed, were always at the same time.
Yeah. Wow. So that's, I mean, you discovered something really important about yourself, that the lack of balance is what caused you to burn out, though, it sounds like.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. So then we went back, you were doing lab, you're shuffling or running maybe between lab and dance classes.
Yep.
I can only imagine what that looks like with your, like, a backpack full of books and, you know, dance clothes, basically. You're like, oh, okay.
So you got the exact right image.
Yeah. Well, I can, yeah. So you get to, you finish up Berkeley, I guess, with your bachelor's in physics. Is that correct?
That's right. And I ended up with a minor in modern dance.
Wow. And that's just awesome, honestly. I mean, just to hear your recognition, but then your chosen dedication towards both in your life, that they were both so important to you that you had to maintain both in your life at some level, which is pretty phenomenal. So when you get done with your physics degree and the bachelor's degree, did you go immediately into a master's program or a PhD? What did you do at that point?
Oh, no. I was done with the world. I went to Israel for a year. Reevaluate my life.
Okay.
Because I was sure I never wanted to do physics ever again.
Okay, so at that point you said, I'm going to go to Israel. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I went to Israel for a year.
Did you go to a kibbutz, or what did you do in Israel?
I was on a program where we spent 3 months in different parts, in different regions of the country.
Wow.
And it was really eye-opening to see, you know, I'd always wanted to study abroad.
What were the four parts of Israel where you lived? And
yeah, well, that could be an entire another podcast, but we started out in a city called Kiryat Shmona, which is pretty close to the Gaza border.
Is this south or west in Israel? Is that what that is?
Sorry?
Is that south and west in Israel?
That's right, okay. Yeah. So it was just on the very northwest corner of Gaza. And it was a very interesting time to be there because it was when Israel was pulling out all of their troops. So they had a military occupation of Gaza, and they decided to completely remove all of their military. And so we were actually watching as, you know, the tanks and soldiers came back from Gaza. So it was an interesting time.
Oh, my goodness. It has to be. Yeah. So where were the other three places in Israel?
So then next we went, oh, I'm sorry, I said Kiryat Shmona. That was the second place.
Okay.
The first place was Ashkelon. Ashkelon is the one next to Gaza.
Okay.
Kiryat Shmona is way up in the north.
Okay. Is it north of Haifa? Where is it?
Yeah, it's north of Haifa, but it's also west of Haifa. So
so it's close to Lebanon, really. It's pretty close to Lebanon.
Sorry, east. My hemispheres are getting mixed up. So it's, it's sort of actually, it's really close to the Golan Heights, if you know where
that is. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, near Syria at that point.
Yeah, so you're sort of in the corner between Syria and
Israel and Lebanon.
Israel and Lebanon, yeah. There was sort of a place where you could look at all three countries.
Oh, fantastic, yeah.
So that was an interesting experience. It's the first time I've ever had rockets shot at me.
Well, yeah, gosh, that must be an interesting experience and memorable, apparently.
Pretty intense. okay. Yeah. I like to say Hezbollah threw me a welcoming party.
Yeah, thanks, guys. That's nice of them.
Yeah, that was scary.
I mean, I think when you say that, you know, rockets were heading in my direction, I think that's kind of the definition of intense.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And so this whole time, though, I'm working in underprivileged Israeli schools, helping students learn English. So in the first place, in the first school we were at, it was actually a boarding school. In Israel, it's very complicated, and they have several different school systems, but this was one of the few school systems where, I mean, essentially kids had been, well, some went voluntarily, some wanted to go to a boarding school, but others had been removed from their homes, and rather than being placed in foster care, they were placed in boarding school. And so you got a huge mix of all of the different cultures and religions in all of, you know, all of Israel. It was, you know, Jewish students, Arab students, Muslim, Christian, Jewish, you know, different regions, some from Russia, some from the Middle East, you know, Iran, or Jews that have been kicked out of Morocco or Syria, all of these different places. And
so Israel, so people don't know, Israel has its own sense of melting pot.
Yeah.
And that's what you're kind of talking about. It's a very multicultural place, especially where you were, it sounds like.
Yeah. And then we went up to the north. And so then I was in a secular school. And that was an entirely different experience altogether. And then after that, I was in Jerusalem. And finally, I ended up in Tel Aviv, working with a professor in Tel Aviv on... Well, she found out that I had skills that I had learned as an undergrad, doing undergraduate research. I'd worked with a professor as an undergrad, and so I developed this data reduction, or I learned this data reduction program for data from the Very Large Array, which is in Socorro, New Mexico, and she had a data that she really needed to be like, basically you take it and you have to image it. So she needed this data imaged, we were connected based on this mutual, I guess, you know, skill set. And so I ended up doing that for my last 3 months of the trip in Tel Aviv. So that was sort of an internship, or you had the option of doing an internship or staying on a kibbutz. So
you're in Israel for an entire year. It sounds like you had a lifetime within a year within Israel.
It was as much of an educational experience as going to Berkeley was.
That says a lot. Wow. That's a great summary. So at this point, didn't you go back to the States, or what was the...
Yeah. So at this point I was... after working with this professor at Tel Aviv University for a couple months, I was like, all right, I kind of miss it. I like doing this stuff. I like being in an academic setting. And so actually about the same time that I was kind of considering going back to it, I got an email from the professor that I had been working with as an undergrad saying that she had some extra money and would I like to come back and work for her.
Thanks for listening to part two of the interview with Dr. Jenna Klusterman, who builds radios to provide 3D pictures of the sky. To continue listening, visit drz.net. That's dr-z.net. You can also follow me on Facebook at Dr. Z Podcasts and Instagram at drznet. As always, happy deciding. The People Behind the PhDs is conceived, written, produced, and edited by Dr. Z, that's me, Zachary Brooks, PhD, in Dr. Z Productions and Podcasts. Learn more at drz.net/about. That's dr-z.net/about.